Even if you're not a painter or an architect or a chef or designer, that doesn't mean you can't be creative. That's the good news about the latest research on creativity, that thinking outside of the box can be taught and learned. It's not just an inborn talent or trait. Everyone is creative. We were interested in some of the current ideas about creativity and innovative problem solving, and we have some guests who are helping us to expand this definition and our understanding as well. And let me introduce them to you. Gerard Puccio, chairman of the International Center for Studies in Creativity at Buffalo State University, co-author of Creative Leadership, Skills That Drive Change. He's also a keynote speaker at the American Creativity Association's World Conference taking place here in Philadelphia. Gerard Puccio, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Well, thank you.
You're welcome. Also with us is Frederica Reisman, and she's president of the American Creativity Association. She's also professor and founding director of Drexel University's Creativity and Innovation Program, and she has developed the Reisman Diagnostic Creativity Assessment. And Frederica Reisman, nice to have you with us on Radio Times as well.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Nice to have you with us. And I'm not sure, we have a third guest that we're hoping to get hooked up sooner rather than later. I'm going to start with a really uncreative question. And Gerard, I want to put this to you.
Mm-hmm.
How do you define creativity? What are we talking about?
Well, Marty, I'm so glad you asked that question right off the bat, because there's many misconceptions in terms of creativity. We define, and the most universally accepted definition in the field of creativity, is it's the production of original ideas, so novelty, that has some value either to the person or to some group, organization, or society.
Do you define it, Freddie, the same kind of
yes,
way?
Yes. In fact, there, Gerard and I disagree with many other creativity researchers who say that useful should be part of the definition. And we do not agree with that. And Gerard proposed the idea of value, which I embraced. So original, novel ideas that have value to the individual.
And the idea of useful is that it has to have some kind of practical purpose.
Yeah,
and that
makes it sound too utilitarian. But I think the important point behind this view of creativity versus the perception that creativity is just being different. You know, it's bizarre or strange. It's being out of the norm. But true creative behavior, true creative products, true creative breakthroughs bring together two things that may pull apart, that may seem to be in opposition. It has to be novel, has to be original, and at the same time provide some value.
There is a probably enduring idea, Freddie, that creativity is something you're born with. If you're if your parent is an artist, there's a good chance that you will be an artist too, that there's something almost genetic or inherited about creativity. Is that wrong, or is that just too narrow a definition?
That's a misconception. Creativity is a human characteristic. We are all creative. Some people are more creative, artists, musicians, let's say, but every one of us has a creativity component. And it can either be enhanced or squelched. And unfortunately, in our schools today, it's being squelched too often.
And squelched by things like all those tests the kids have to take, for instance?
Well, teachers do not recognize the creative kids. They can be a challenge. They want to know why. They want the teacher to give evidence. They are active. They get very bored if they just have to sit and listen to a lecture. And so they become a challenge to the teacher. And the teachers think that creative children are those who smile at them, who agree with them, and who aren't behavior problems.
I wanted to, I was thinking about this, putting the show together, Gerard, which is when you think about children, especially young children, I mean, they are sort of natural artists and natural scientists. I mean, they are creating all the time as they develop. And as people become, even through school, but become adults, I think they begin to think of themselves, I'm either creative or I'm not creative.
Well, it's interesting. Being someone who studies and teaches creativity full time, and someone who travels, sitting next to someone on the airplane, the natural conversation you get into with a stranger is, what do you do?
Right.
And then eventually I have to say, I teach creativity, I study creativity, and often the immediate reaction that I get from the person next to me is, oh my gosh, I'm not creative. And Freddie's exactly right. If you're human, you're creative. This definition that we gave earlier about producing original ideas that serve some value, we all have to do this in our lives. And there's an important distinction to make. In the field, we talk about big C creativity, the great creators, and little C creativity, which is everyday acts of creativity that we all have to do. When my son Anthony was a toddler, he would not stay in bed when we put him to bed at night. It disrupted the entire household. So we had to find some solution to this problem, which was I gave him 3 pennies on his nightstand, and I said, Anthony, if you need to call us, you can, but you have to trade a penny. And he recognized, because I told him, once you're done with these 3 pennies, we're not coming back. So he used 1, maybe 2, and then by then he'd fall asleep. But this is an example of an original solution that provides some value. So when we talk about creativity, we're talking about both the big C creativity, the famous painters, artists, the great creators, as well as everyday creativity.
We have a third guest I want to get on in just a moment or two, but Freddie, going back to you then, but how do you, for those people that say, oh, I'm not creative, how do you get past that?
Well, awareness is so important. People are not aware of their creative strengths. And at Drexel, we have a Apple app that taps 11 of the creativity characteristics that have emerged from the research: originality, fluency, which means generating a lot of ideas, tolerance of ambiguity, resistance to premature closure. Like, for example, if you're in a conversation with someone and they finish your sentence and it's not what you wanted to say, they're coming to premature closure. Yeah. So our students in our master's program take this RDCA, and they invariably say, we were not aware of our creativity. And I was sharing with Gerard that every quarter I have at least one student who says, it's changed my life. Just powerful. Awareness is powerful.
I mean, it sounds like, Gerard, a different kind of thinking. I mean, you almost have to, like, reprogram yourself.
Exactly. Well, creativity is an ability like any other ability, which means we all possess it to varying degrees, and as an ability, it can be enhanced. And in particular, when you begin to focus on the thinking process, which we know is teachable and learnable, you can teach people how to be more effective creative thinkers.
Let me get our third guest in on the conversation. Jack Mattson is Emeritus Professor of Environmental Engineering at Penn State, developed the university's MOOC course, or the massive open online course called Creativity, Innovation, and Change. I also read that he has a course that he teaches there called Failure 101. I think I took that course. Jack Mattson, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Good. Glad to be here.
So why is failure important to creativity?
Well, because if you come up with creative ideas, you then have to figure out which ones are worth pursuing. And the way you figure that out is you take experimental approaches. You try this, you try that, and in each trial or experiment, most of them aren't going to work out. However, in each experiment, there's knowledge to be acquired, and you grab onto that knowledge, and eventually you have a foundation of knowledge that allows you to successfully implement, innovate something. So failure is looked at as bad in terms of if you have big failures, but if you look at it as a productive way to develop new knowledge, it really changes your attitude toward it. And in changing your attitude, you try to remove the negative self-esteem from yourself and understand that I'm trying something new, and I may run through 10, 20, 30 attempts at doing it, and that's just the price I pay for learning what I need to learn.
You're nodding your head there, Gerard.
Well, I agree completely with Jack, because that's the essence of the creative process we were talking about earlier, which is to experiment, test many ideas. Those who were great creators didn't just have one idea.
They had many ideas.
It's a fallacy to think it was simply one aha. Generally, great creators produce lots of ideas, and they pursue the ones that they see the greatest promise in. So along the way, they have lots of failures, and they're learning all along the way. So I can't you know, agree anymore with Jack. He's precisely on target.
But, Freddie, do you think it takes some kind of courage to be willing to fail?
One of the characteristics that we tap on the RDCA is
and risk, this is your diagnostics test, yes.
That's correct. It's risk-taking, smart risk-taking, I say. And, in fact, we were presenting at another conference at Drexel yesterday, and one of the people in my audience said, well, I teach skydiving.
Talk about risk-taking, right?
Right.
Is that part of it, Jack Mattson?
Risk-taking? Well, it is. Risk is a big issue because you have to evaluate what's the downside of the risk you're taking. Do you have the... do you have the money or whatever it takes? Do you have the tenacity? And I like the word courage because courage is essential to create things. It takes so much time and effort, and you really have to be dedicated. And also, you're generally going against some societal norm, whatever it is. That is, society really likes steady state and stability, and so whatever you're creating may be different, and you're going to have a lot of naysayers saying, oh, that's stupid, you shouldn't go that way. And you got to have that tenacity and courage to go beyond that.
Well, let me build on that and tie it back to a question or a point that you made earlier, Marty, about children versus adults. So when you look at producing novel ideas that serve some value, and you think about what are the components within the individual that allows you to do that, there's a formula that sort of provides an elegant summary of this. It was created by one of the founders of our department at Buffalo State, Ruth Noller, who was a mathematician. So she came up with a formula. And she says it takes three things for creative behavior. It takes knowledge, which has been endorsed by many theories in the field. In order to create, you have to understand your discipline. You have to understand the problem. You have to understand the history of whatever the situation is that you're up against. But you can't get trapped by your knowledge. You need to experiment and use your imagination, which is the second component. And then the third component is good critical thinking or evaluation. So it's knowledge, imagination, and evaluation. Now, where are children naturally strong? Imagination.
Right.
But as we grow older, we get feedback. Oh, you know, you're...
That's wrong.
That's wrong.
You made
a
mistake.
That's not real. Yeah, you make a mistake. So what happens is, as Jack was pointing out, it takes courage. Most adults start to pull back. And imagination atrophies. So in some ways, knowledge can push out imagination because we believe we know the truth, that this is all we need to know. And that's very dangerous because it takes all three. It's a mix of all three, knowledge, imagination, and evaluation.
Well, we're going to take a very short break and then get back to our conversation. We are talking about creativity in this hour of Radio Times. Our guests are Gerard Puccio, the voice you just heard, also with us, Frederica Reisman, and joining us by telephone, Jack Mattson. And we are talking about the fact that, yes, for some people, creativity is innate, but it's also something that can be taught and can be learned. Stay with us after this very short break. We'll be right back.
Beck Institute for Cognitive Behavior Therapy supports WHYY and offers a research-based and compassionate treatment approach for clients at their Center for Psychotherapy in Bella Cynwyd. More information about the Beck Institute and CBT at beckinstitute.org.
International House Philadelphia supports WHYY, just announced the Philadelphia premiere of Bjork's new concert film Biophilia Live on November 1st. Also coming soon to International House, a conversation with artist Stephen Powers about the impact of travel and culture on art and artistic practice on September 18th, a family film favorite, The Black Stallion, on September 27th, and the 30th anniversary screening of Prince's Purple Rain on September 30th. Full list of events and information at ihousephilly.org. International House Philadelphia, the hub of international culture.
I'm Jeremy Hobson. The summer may be coming to an end, but that doesn't mean the music you listen to can't keep it alive a bit longer. KCRW DJ Ann Litt joins us with some final songs of summer next time on Here and Now from NPR and WBUR Boston.
This afternoon at 1 on WHYY.
Supporting WHYY, TIAA CREF Financial Services. More information at TIAA.org. TIAA CREF Individual and Institutional Services, LLC, and Teachers Personal Investor Services, Incorporated.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss Cohen, and on the eve of the American Creativity Association's World Conference here in Philadelphia, we're talking with the keynote speaker, Gerard Puccio, chair of the International Center for Studies in Creativity at Buffalo State University. We're also talking with Frederica Reisman, president of the American Creativity Association, also founding director of Drexel University's Creativity and Innovation Program, and with Jack Mattson. He's emeritus professor of environmental engineering at Penn State, teaches courses in creativity, innovation, and the importance of failure. And this note, you are invited to go to a panel at the Sheraton in Old City tomorrow at 5:30 to hear about creativity as a bridge between education and industry. And let me go back to you, Jack Mattson. And I am interested in this notion of, as you say, of failure and of courage. And this is something that Frederica was saying before we got you on the air, which is, from her perspective, so many kids sort of have this knocked out of them as they go through school. Either they don't fit in because they're a creative, out-of-the-box kind of student. And also schools today are all about testing and making sure that you pass the test, and which is important. But do you worry that failure is seen as a bad thing and not perhaps a creative thing? Do we have him?
Do you have me?
Yes, go ahead, Jack.
If you're in Silicon Valley, actually, when you look for jobs, they ask for your failure resume.
Oh, do they really? I love that.
Things like that. So, you know, what is your experience base? How many failures have you gone through, and what have you learned by them, and have you had enough of them to, you know, take this new position at a startup? So you do have that attitude in the technology areas, and it's an attitude that's spreading because I call this period, this technological age, fast history, where everything is speeding up and breaking down. And I wrote a book a number of years ago called Innovate or Die, which means that on a personal level, you have to keep reinventing yourself, because what you're trained for is ultimately probably what you're not going to be doing. You're going to go through many phases in your life. So you need to constantly rejuvenate, retrain, and you do that by using your creativity. I mean, that's the most powerful weapon in terms, I shouldn't say weapon, but a trait in terms of doing well in this society and the way it's evolving so quickly.
Sure, you have to keep learning. Go ahead.
Well, and building on Jack's comments, many economists believe we live in the time of or era of innovation and change. And if you look at product life cycles, for example, products go through a fundamental redesign every 5 to 10 years. And in the area of technology, Apple released new products this week.
I was just thinking of Apple yesterday, yeah.
It's 6 to 12 months for fundamental redesign. And if you look at children in school now, by the time they get to adult age and then up to about the age of 45, the prediction is they'll change careers 11 times. So this notion of constantly reinventing yourself is right on target. And that's one of the reasons why there are many reports that say when you look at workplace skills, professional skills, you see creative thinking, entrepreneurship, creative problem solving, because we live in a world that's changing so rapidly. In order to adapt and to be flexible, creative thinking is now a core competence.
I mean, we need these creative problem solvers, Freddie.
And when you think about errors and failures, Post-its evolved from failure. Velcro evolved from failure. So there is serendipity. Very important products have evolved from failure.
Do you think there is a, thinking about what Jack was just talking about, that there is a kind of a disconnect then between the perhaps Silicon Valley and the rest of us, mm-hmm. but Silicon Valley and even our system of education? I mean, to have on your resume, what are all your great failures? What did you learn from that?
I think they're way ahead of the rest of us. I think that's a great idea.
Well, specifically to that point in terms of education, when you look at the fundamentals of creative thinking, there are two specific forms of thinking that make up creative thinking. One is divergent thinking, which is to explore and to look for diverse ideas. And the flip side of that is convergent thinking, which is to evaluate and find the most promising solution. Where do schools tend to focus? Mm. Single right answers. There's an, in my opinion, over-focus on convergent thinking when we know, and Freddie can certainly speak to this, when you look at predicting adult success and achievement, divergent thinking is a much greater predictor of adult achievement than IQ, because divergent thinking helps you to create alternatives and options for yourself in your life.
You want to add to that, Freddie?
Well, I agree. Most people think of creative thinking as just the divergent part of it, the brainstorming, which started at Buffalo State, by the way.
Oh, brainstorming did?
Okay. With Osborne, yeah, Alex Osborne. Uh-huh. And so creative thinking is a sequence of divergent, where you're open, you're brainstorming, you're generating many original ideas, and then you focus on, let's say you're looking at solutions, you focus on a solution. So that's the convergent, where you analyze, you evaluate, and then you diverge again on the solution you picked, and you find different angles to that, and then you converge, and then you diverge. Mm. So creative thinking is a sequence of divergent, convergent thinking.
And these are trainable skills.
Mm-hmm.
I was just going to turn to you, Jack. Go ahead.
Okay. I have as one of the first exercises in my course for students to produce a failure resume. Huh. At least six failures that they experienced in their young lives. Some of them have problems with this, but I get them to do it. And then they bring their failure resumes to class, and I say, okay, put down six successes you've had. And they do that, and then I say, well, are there any connections between those failures and successes? And it's amazing how they can draw the lines and show, well, I didn't do well in music, so I decided I would become a soccer player or whatever. But anyways, or I decided to look at the violin in a different way and go to folk music rather than classical music. So I think we all can write failure resumes, and we can then look at those and say, well, it looks like, things that went wrong for us either strengthened mm-hmm. our resolve or took us in different directions, and we're here because of that kind of pathway.
Well, and I think that's interesting, because for some people, failure means I'm going to go do something else, and mm-hmm. for other people, saying, damn it, I'm going to solve this. Mm-hmm. Gerard? Mm-hmm.
Well, it's highly instructive. If you're not willing to try new things, and you're going to stay in your comfort zone. And the only way to expand your comfort zone is to take on new ideas. Mm-hmm. But anytime you try something novel, of course, there's an opportunity for failure. But that's how you grow.
Right. Jack, what's on your failure resume since you asked your students to do this?
I was out playing tennis in Houston in 1984, and there was an incoming storm, but the courts weren't wet, and I got hit by lightning.
Oh. Mm.
And a shard of it hit me on the head and scrambled my brain to a certain degree, and I went into post-traumatic stress disorder that
wow.
required therapy. But in
wow.
that therapy, my psychologist asked me the question, well, let's talk about your creativity. And I said, well, I'm an engineer. You know, I'm clever, but I don't consider myself creative. I don't write or do art or anything like that. And he said, well, let's go back to when you were 5 years old. And so we did that. And in that kind of Freudian process, I recognized quite quickly that I had a lot of creative potential that had been on the sidelines.
Well, that sounds like a really good therapist, and I'm glad you got help, Jack Mattson. We are talking about creativity in this hour of Radio Times. Again, talking with Jack Mattson. He's an emeritus professor of environmental engineering at Penn State and teaches creativity, innovation, and failure. Also with us, Frederica Reisman, and she's president of the American Creativity Association, also professor and founding director of Drexel University's Creativity and Innovation Program. And our third guest is Gerard Puccio, chair chairman of the International Center for Studies in Creativity at Buffalo State University, co-author of Creative Leadership Skills That Drive Change. And yes, we are talking about creativity on Radio Times, and we want to hear from you. That phone number is 1-888-477-9499. You can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can send us a tweet at Marty Moss Cohen. Let me get Susan from Center City, Philadelphia to join us. Hi, Susan. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
I'm a writer. When I was about 50, my writing group took a creativity test, a right brain, left brain test, and I was astonished to find how far on the right side, on the creative side, I was. And I thought it was wrong because I thought creativity was a compliment, and I was not accustomed to complimenting myself. But as I lived with it and learned it, I discovered that was me, and that explained why I had never fit into any job.
Uh-huh.
I was always the square peg in the round hole, and I suddenly figured that wasn't a failure on my part. It was just how I was made.
Well, Susan, that's
I feel much better knowing who I am.
Absolutely. I appreciate the call to Radio Times. Let me pick up on something she said about right brain, left brain, and perhaps Gerardo, go back to you. And I think there have been books written about that.
Right, right. I think when you look at brain hemisphericity, it takes a whole brain to be creative. Certainly, the notion that the right brain is the more intuitive, there seems to be some support to that. The left hemisphere seems to be more analytical. But the reality is you need both to be creative. You need to be able to produce those out-of-the-box ideas as well as to be able to refine, evaluate, and craft them. So you can think about those also as, and there's some measures that look at this, your style of creativity, where like our caller may be more the intuitive, divergent thinking style of creativity. You also have those who are more effective at taking an idea and refining it, making some adaptations to it, which might be considered more of a left brain kind of style of creativity.
And Freddie, aren't you a mathematician?
Yes.
Okay. I mean, that's, you know, it's a different avenue in.
That's right. That's right. But Gerard is bringing up a very important point. As we go through research over many years, our ideas change. There was one time when the right-left brain was the focus of research, and that really has been discarded. The brain is an integral whole, and although one may have strengths in one or the other side of the brain, to say that I'm a right-brain person is really not the way to go.
Susan, thanks for the call to Radio Times. Jack, we have a Facebook comment for you from Jean saying, what is the unit of measure for creativity? Do we need to measure creativity?
Well, that's one of the biggest problems confronting teaching this is how do you measure it? And I measure it two ways. One is in terms of my students' volume of ideas. There is a rough correlation between how many ideas can be generated and how creative you are. And when you generate a lot of ideas, you know, there may be some gems in there. It may take 100 or 1,000 ideas to really have one that is radical and different and makes a difference. So that's one way. And then we look at, well, what is the product of the creative idea? What is the innovation? Like, I teach innovative design and entrepreneurship. So what's the result? Do you have something there that people see it as different, see it as creative? So it becomes a peer review process in terms of the ultimate outcome.
How do you measure it that way?
Yeah, Gerard? Yeah. The standard, and Jack touched on one of the measurable criteria in terms of creativity. When you look at divergent production, fluency, which is what Jack just referred to, and in fact, that's what great creators do. Mm. When Hemingway was done writing a book, he would generate 100 titles, and then he would go through and select the one that he thought fit best. And if there weren't any from that list, he would generate another 100. So that's one indicator. There's also originality in thought. So you can produce lots of ideas, but are you generating ideas that others aren't able to think of? And are you a flexible thinker in that you generate ideas that are in different tracks. They're not all of one kind. And these are easy to measure.
And is doggedness also a part of creativity, determination?
Without a doubt. When you look at what separates the great creators from those who aren't able to achieve, one of the things that you see is just hard work. In fact, there's a concept called the 10-year rule, where it takes about 10 years of hard work and persistence and failure along the way before you get to that level of big breakthrough.
Wow. Let me get, looks like Julie from media to join us on Radio Times. Hi, Julie. Go ahead. You're on the air. Hi, Julie. Go ahead.
Hi. I just wanted to say, you know, I know the public schools get a lot of flack for cutting back on the arts. And at, here at Lives True Media School District, I find that our kids have been so well served in the band program, and I know the arts program also does beautifully, to the point where, you know, I'm taking my senior around right now to check out different colleges, and he's interested in continuing to march in band in college, and it seems like 50% of the band tends to be in the engineering program.
Well, that's interesting. Julie, I appreciate the call to Radio Times. And, I mean, I'm glad to hear that there are school districts that still have music and arts and band. But sadly, in Philadelphia and other districts that are really having to tighten their belt, oftentimes, Freddie, those are the first things to go.
That's right. And it's unfortunate because that's where the youngsters can be open and create their own ideas, they're not just music and athletics, but just it opens up their lives. And when we can touch what a child is interested in and cares about, and then start to bring forth that attitude and that strength, then they're going to be more willing to learn. Mm. But if they're way away from what we want to teach them, and if they don't have the foundation, then it's just very frustrating for the teachers and for the children.
And Jack, we're almost up on a break here. It's interesting, Julie talks about her son being good in engineering and music, and since you're an engineer yourself, is there, do you think, a connection there?
Well, the connection is the more diverse you are as a human being, the more creative you're going to be. So if you can connect music with engineering, you're unlimited in what the possibilities are. That's a real principle that everybody should understand. Get as many diverse experiences as you can. Find your passions in whatever they are. If you're passionate in music and engineering, there's going to be places for you in acoustics or other areas where you're going to be able to combine your passions, and that makes for a truly creative person.
And that's Jack Mattson, who joins us along with Gerard Puccio and Frederica Reisman. We are talking about creativity in this hour of Radio Times, and we have calls coming in at 1-888-477-9499. You can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. Or again, you can send us a tweet at WHYY Radio Times. Much more after this very short break. We'll be right back.
PNC Arts Alive and the Brandywine River Museum of Art in Chatsford support WHYY and present First Sunday's family programs, pirate treasure hunts, artistic animal adventures, and other family events held monthly on the first Sunday. More at brandywine.org.
The day repeal passes, I intend to be open for business, legally, in the thirstiest country on earth.
Boardwalk Empire began its final season Sunday. The year is now 1931, and Prohibition is nearing the end. On the next Fresh Air, we talk with the show's creator, Terrence Winter, who also wrote for The Sopranos and wrote the screenplay for The Wolf of Wall Street. Join us.
This afternoon at 3, and again tonight at 7, on WHYY.
Another forever war?
Our wars these days tend to turn into exceedingly long campaigns that yield inconclusive outcomes, and the longer they drag on, people who once favored the war change their mind.
D-Day for ISIS, but with no beachhead and no clear definition of victory. That's next time on The Takeaway from PRI, Public Radio International.
Today at noon on WHYY.
Supporting WHYY, the Lincoln Motor Company, introducing the first ever Lincoln MKC with available active noise control that reduces unwanted cabin noise to help provide a more pleasant driving experience. More at Lincoln.com.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscow, and we are talking about creativity, the fact that it can be an inborn trait or talent, but it also can be taught and can be learned. And again, our guests are Gerard Puccio, Frederica Reisman, and Jack Mattson. And we have calls coming in at 1-888-477-9499. Gerard, going back to you, and we've heard from actually all three of you about the importance of not specializing.
Spanning, right.
Thank
spanning
you.
Spanning different domains.
There you go.
Yeah.
And there's so much focus these days, especially on young people, but I also mm-hmm. think for adults as well. Mm-hmm. Specialize. Pick that one thing and become an expert in it.
Well, and it's not only risky for an individual, but for teams as well that are trying to innovate. When they over-specialize and they start to close out ideas and they become too wedded to their own practices, the risk is you don't bring in fresh thinking. So if you look at great creators. So you look at the Wright brothers, how they borrowed ideas from fluid dynamics and from bicycle engineering in order to create a plane that was able to, you know, fly, that was a heavier than air machine. It's very typical. And when you don't allow for the spanning of boundaries and you become too narrow, Hemingway said he learned as much about writing from artists and psychologists and historians as he did from other writers. And as Jack pointed out, one of the advantages for children especially is to expose them to lots of subjects and domains so that they can hopefully find that area that is intrinsically engaging for them, because Teresa Mobley, Harvard Business School, has found that those who pursue areas that they're passionate about, that they're intrinsically engaged in, are much more likely to be creative and happy.
And we can become too narrow in creativity also. We work with corporations who want to develop an environment of a creative environment. And what we're finding is when they create teams, it's not as good to have a team of all creatives, but rather a team that's more heterogeneous produces better ideas.
Jack, you have written about styles of creativity. There's the adventurer, the explorer, the tourist. We don't have time to get into each of those, but I'm thinking about the team approach versus that lone kind of individual trying to problem solve. Is a team approach, assuming you've got the right mix of people, is that more creative than the solo creative person?
Yes, I think that that's universally understood that you get with team, you get number one, you get diversity, because if you need 1,000 ideas, to generate 1,000 ideas yourself is going to take a long time, and different people have different ideas to bring that to the table. Secondly, everybody needs to understand that taking a creative approach to life, an experimental approach in doing things, it's messy and it's uncertain. And when you're working in a team, you can support each other because it is arduous and, it's going to be failure-filled. So if you have the right kind of team where everybody's on board and you know what your goals are, then you bring your creative processes. The other thing is you've got to at first eliminate people or eliminate negativity. That kills the creative process early on. So in the brainstorming or early phases, if people are making judgments, then that's a killer, and you got to watch for that and prevent it.
Yes, and. Go ahead, Gerard.
Yes, and. In fact, that's a creativity technique. Yes, and, rather than yes, but. Nice job. So Marty was referring earlier to our own program at Buffalo State, which was originated by Alex Osborne, who was the person who invented brainstorming. And Jack was just touching on a principle that's fundamental to brainstorming, but just good divergent thinking. And again, a skill that many great creators have, which is that ability to suspend judgment just temporarily to allow one to explore the idea and explore very broadly all the possibilities. Too many times, I was just in a meeting this week, we were kicking around ideas, an idea came up. It was a novel idea. I thought it was an interesting idea. The very next comment was, that won't work. That's ridiculous. And you could feel the energy in the room just get sucked out, because it's not only the creativity in the people, but it's the atmosphere, it's the environment. And whether the environment, whether you're talking about a family, a classroom, a work unit, that atmosphere can either support or undermine creative thinking.
Well, improv, part of improv is yes and. I mean, the idea that helps the improv. Let me see what Fran from Haddonfield, New Jersey has to say. Fran, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi.
Hi there.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
You're very welcome.
I wanted to say that I am privileged to teach a class called Discovering Your Creativity at the Fleischer Art Memorial.
Sure.
So the area people know that wonderful place at 7th and Catherine. And it's just a treat, really. It's an art school, a community art school, and so we're using art materials, but I have the privilege of seeing people really can't believe what's happening, because they can all do it. That's my premise, is that we all have it, we can all do it. We just need a path, an open path, and that's what I can provide. So people tell me that, you know, they had bad experiences in school and the teacher said it was wrong and all of these things. And so it's just a thrill for me to see people develop and be very happy at the end of our 10 weeks. So, and I love your show, love
Thanks.
What everybody's saying. It's
Thanks.
Thrilling and it's just the best.
Well, you sound like a great teacher, Fran, and you have some lucky students who get to learn from you. Gerard, you have a big smile on your face.
I do. Well, Freddie alluded to this earlier, but one of the reasons why I love the work that I do is it helps people to reconnect with their creativity, which is the essence of humanity.
Right.
And there's few things that are so gratifying than to see you put your imagination to work to create an idea, to get into that flow moment where you lose track of time. So
it's a great feeling. Fran, thanks for the call. We have an email from Jamie. How can companies create opportunities for their employees to think and act more creatively on a daily basis? The world is listening to your answer, Freddie. Go ahead.
Well,
I'll give you all a chance to take a whack at that.
Well, actually, a colleague and I wrote a chapter in a management book on developing talent management within the corporation. I'm sure consultants aren't going to like to hear this,
but what we're
proposing is that corporations develop their own in-house talent managers who have been trained in creativity, who understand the various strategies that you can use to help people increase their fluency of ideas, increase coming up with different categories of ideas, showing how you can avoid premature closure, which is what Gerard was talking about. And there are strategies that we will be coming out with in a manual that supplements the RDCA that people can develop in-house. And it's really very exciting when they become their own creative
Absolutely.
Helpers.
Jack, do you want to add to that? And I should say the RDCA is the Reisman Diagnostic Creativity Assessment, just so people know. Jack, do you want to add to something that Freddie was saying?
Yes, I do. Two ways. One is I'm actually going to France this weekend to do a workshop on reinventing Europe for small businesses, because that's their recession there is just killing off small business, particularly in France. And you have this problem of tradition and structure in a company. That's what most companies want is tradition, structure, and steady state. And so to bring in creatives can cause chaos. So there is an issue also between internal innovation and how to maintain the hierarchy. Mm-hmm. And that's always difficult, and it needs to be tackled from the top. That is, the top people in the company need to learn to be creative first, and then the others will look up to them and you'll have something. And so it's probably one of the toughest problems we have. Most companies the way they innovate is to buy small companies that are innovative and just buy whatever they've done, and those creative people move on and they've got their new stuff. So it is extremely tough.
How do you deal with the kind of tradition, I guess, or sense of conformity, or this is the way we've always done things?
It's a natural tension, conformity and creativity. They both actually work together. When you get out of balance, then an organization's not going to be successful if there's too much creativity or too much conformity. But I think Jack's exactly right. Both through my research and practice and working with organizations, and I could say a lot about how to help organizations be more creative, but the number one variable is leadership. Leadership. When you look at the creative climate in an organization, whether you're talking about a school or a financial firm or government, leadership behavior has a 40 to 70% impact on the environment. So I think you have to start with leaders modeling the way, and they have to embrace creativity themselves.
Let me get Ernie from Williamstown, New Jersey, to join us on Radio Times. And Ernie, go ahead. You are on the air.
Well, thank you.
You're welcome.
This is a great, great topic.
Thank you.
Unfortunately, we don't hear more of this type of dialogue as much as we should, because I concur with everyone saying what they've been saying. And where I'm going with this is that I am 62 years old, and I have a degree in environmental and industrial design, and did not know that I was creative until after I graduated high school and went into the United States Army. And someone was a creative writer, helped me compose a composition that allowed me to enter into a foundation program at the Philadelphia College of Art.
Oh, wow.
And at that point, the world opened up to me. And diversity, I concur, is the absolute essential part of developing both processes. And I've gone on to do major solar energy projects, one that you could readily see at the Lincoln Financial Field for NRG, and also have designed and built custom furniture and owned my own custom cabinet company for 8 years until the recession hit.
Well, you know what, Ernie? Let me take your comments, because I think it was interesting, and there's a bit of a theme, and Gerard, I'll go back to you. I mean, here's someone else, obviously became a very creative and productive person. He didn't know it.
Yeah.
He didn't know.
This is why it's so important, and Freddie talked about it earlier, the self-awareness, letting people know that this is important for you in your life and that you are a creative person. And to Ernie's point, it doesn't matter what age you are. I did a video course for the company Great Courses, and I got an email, probably one of the most delightful messages I've ever received several months ago, from a 93-year-old man who watched the course and said, "This changed my life." It's remarkable. So it doesn't matter what your age is. You can recapture your creativity.
Go ahead, Freddie.
We did some research in a neighboring school district that is always at the bottom of the list on the state testing. And one of the problems was the youngsters, this was middle school, they weren't coming to class. And I gave them the Torrance Test of Creative Thinking. And Paul Torrance from the University of Georgia is known as the father of creativity worldwide. And the children on an achievement test got third percentile. They were really very low. And on the Torrance Test of Creative Thinking, on the verbal, which taps similar things to an achievement test, they were low. But on the figural, where you show your creativity with drawing, they were 75th to 95th percentile. And I gave the Torrance to all 7th, 9th, and 10th graders. I had a group of 27 youngsters in a grant and 11 math and science teachers. And I went over every youngster's profile with the teachers, and the teachers started to get all kinds of insight. We've been lecturing these kids since kindergarten. They're hands-on learners. They need real-world experiences. And they were teaching science out of the science book at high school level, and the youngsters were on third grade reading. So they moved to lab-based math and science. The youngsters started to come to class. The whole environment turned around. And it was all because the teachers became aware of their students' creative strengths.
Hmm. Jack, anything you want to add to that?
Yes. I've been doing what are called MOOC courses. A MOOC course is a massive open online course. I've done two of them with the title of Creativity, Innovation, and Change. The first course had about 150,000 students in it, and this one we just finished had 60,000, and these represented about 200 countries. And so the diversity was incredible. And the way people looked at creativity, depending on the culture, was very, very different. And yet they were interacting with each other in astounding and amazing ways. And so, for instance, a number of people from the Mideast, they were looking for religious or spiritual reasons to embrace creativity. In many of the Western countries, they were looking at it to increase their wealth. So it's amazing how diversity plays a role, whether it's just diversity inside a human being or having a diverse team that has, you know, a complement of women, of people of other ethnicities. That diversity is what the world is all about now, and many teams are set up electronically to take advantage of that.
Well, you know, Jack, I got to jump in here only because they're playing my song. We have to end our discussion, and it seems like a good note to end on. Jack Mattson, thank you very much for joining us today in Radio Times.
You're welcome.
And Frederica Reisman, thank you very much for joining
Pleasure.
Us as well. And Gerard Puccio, thanks for getting up so early and joining us on Radio
you.
Times as well. Go to whyy.org/Radio Times, and you can find out much more about this program. Kevin Griffin, the engineer for today's edition of the show, produced by Susan Greenbaum, Debbie Bilder, Emily Bryant, and John Ahrens. I'm Marty Moscow-Wayne. Thank you so much for joining us.